Okay. Today's topic I wanted to talk about is what's known as Hasagas Gavul. Well, define what it is. The Torah in Sefer Devarim talks about something called Hasagas Gavul, and it has nothing to do with what we're talking about today. The Chumash tells us, Lo Sasig Gavul Re'acha She Gavul Rishon Benachas Cha She Tincho Barat Asher Hashem Alkecha Nosen Lacha Rishka. What it means is as follows, to make a not-so-long story even shorter. The story is that there is a specific biblical violation of moving borders in Israel. In the event that we're neighbors and I move my fence onto your property, and by that I steal some of your land, that is a biblical violation. So, but right now we're not in Israel. In Denver, you're allowed to do this. Actually, you're not allowed to do it here either, but if you do it in Israel, there is an additional violation as well. It doesn't come up that often, this original rule of Hasagas Gavul. However, the word Hasagas Gavul colloquially has come to mean something else, and that's what I want to talk about today. Hasagas Gavul, what they talk about colloquially, is what we would call unfair competition. So let's cover some crazy case. Let's say I lived in a city where there was one kosher restaurant. So if somebody would want to open a second kosher restaurant, that would be perhaps a violation of Hasagas Gavul. Hasagas Gavul meaning moving in on someone else's boundary. Now, I'd like to discuss whether that, in fact, is true, and if so, what the parameters are when we are allowed to compete and when we're not allowed to compete. What is considered fair competition and what is considered unfair competition? Now, we'll just put in the background the following concern. Here in these great United States of America, we have something called the Sherman Antitrust Act, right? It's around 100 years old at this point. What is the Sherman Antitrust Act? Correct. Very good. That in fact, you are not allowed, that in fact, it is the act which is meant to break up monopolies. In the event that a Beis Din would be encouraging monopolies, that would seem perhaps to be a violation of the Sherman Antitrust Act, right? This rule of Hasagas Gavul, at first blush, would seem to be a direct violation of the Sherman Antitrust Act. And the question is, could a Beis Din be sued here in these great United States of America for enforcing Hasagas Gavul, thereby violating the Sherman Antitrust Act? Yes. Am I familiar of any case of where charges have been brought against a Beis Din for violating the Sherman? No, I am not. But one is we haven't discussed this at all yet, so I don't know if they run it. But even if they did run afoul, again, even if they, I assume a Beis Din, even if it would be prosecuted, would still have to follow halacha. Right? They would still be obligated, right? Let's say a Beis Din, let's say there was a same gender couple who came forward and the civil or legal spouse wanted support from the other spouse, right? So they come to Beis Din to recognize the relationship, right? And there is potential that in the event that the Beis Din would not recognize the relationship, they would be violating the law. They could be sued, right? That would not allow us to do it, right? So again, just the mere fact whether they've been sued or not doesn't necessarily control whether it is whether it changes the law or not. The main source that we have to look at is a source number two. It's a little bit longer. It's a little bit Aramaic. It's a lot of Aramaic, actually. But we're going to really go through it well because being that it is the prime source, and in many ways just about the only source, it is very necessary for us to understand it. We start with the opinion of Rav Huna. The Rav Amar Rav Huna Haibar Muvad Uki Recha. There once was someone who lived in an alleyway. And they set up a mill. And then someone from the next alley came up and set up another mill right next door. Can you believe that? So Rav Huna says, the first guy can throw the other guy out. He has a right to say, you NIMBY, not in my backyard, get out. That's it.
Does
Because he's saying to him that you are impinging upon my livelihood. Yes.
Because I was here first.
I was here first. This is my corner. I marked it, you know, like animals do sometimes, and that's it. You can come here. And he says, Lema misayeyale, and perhaps there is a support to this. From what? The Meirech, as it says, Marchike Mitsudas Hadog Min Hadog Kamale Ritzas Dog. In the event that a fishing boat goes out and puts out a net, they have a right to tell if I go and I, so how do I catch fish? I go and first I drop down my bait, right? I will get the fish to come here, then I'll bring a net and I'll catch them all. So I drop the bait, right? And I put down, now you can't come and also put down your net, right? You have to give me a certain amount of space. So the Gemara says perhaps this supports the idea. In fact, how far is how much space you get? A parasang. A parasa is for a meal. For a meal is about a kilometer. Meaning that once I lay down my bait here, and you have to stay
at least a kilometer.
2 or 4 kilometers.
4 kilometers.
2.5 miles away from me. So that would seem to me that that's what seems to support the idea that this is my market and you have to stay out of it. So it says, Shani Dugam, the Yav Siora. So he said, well, that's not really the same. He said, because when it came to the fish, I, in fact, had to do something to get the fish here, right? I laid out the money. I put out the bait. I attracted the fish. Now, after I do that, for you to step in and grab the fish, that would really not be nice. But in the case of the mill, what have I done? I plopped down my mill here. You plopped down your mill there. I haven't really, you're not taking advantage of any of my investment. Okay, so then maybe that's not so. So maybe the source is from the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. It's not, as it says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo yachru chenvani kloyos ve'gozim letinokos v'shimar girin oso. Says you're not allowed to go and have the, a store owner can't give out candies to kids. Rechachamim matirim. However, the chachamim say you can do that, right? What would that be? Sort of like a loss leader, right? I'm advertising. Come in, right? It's an investment. So this is a machlokes, and in this machlokes, it would seem that Rav Huna is following Rabbi Yehuda, as opposed to the Chachamim that disagree. Now, if I had a choice, if I wanted my opinion to be like Rav Yehuda or like Chachamim, who would I rather be like? Chachamim. Why would I rather be like Chachamim? There's more of them. Majority rules. If there's a matter of disagreement between one opinion, one individual, and everybody else, right? So it would seem from this that if you tell me that the comment of Rav Huna is supporting the opinion of Rav Yehuda, that's bad news for Rav Yehuna because he's going to lose here. And according to that, there won't be a problem with competition. So if you say, according to that, maybe we don't follow this opinion. So the Gemara says, no, not so simple. This case, the case of the mills, is not necessarily the same as the case of the candies. Why? So perhaps the reason that Rav Budim disagrees is because I have a right to get even. I feel a team of rabbanon. I can go my plug there about it. Elder Yehuda, a house of Elam, I'm a kamil for you and I'm a gozi. At plugi shusiki, chiyuski. Mean that he says, in the case where I could say he's giving out candies and people are going to come to him, he's giving out candles, you give out balloons, right? He's giving out nuts, you give out apricots. Mean that there's a way that I can even it out. That this isn't unfair competition. I can do something, you can do the same. But that's in the case where I have already set up shop and you're just moving in on me, maybe the Rabbanim agree. So again, we don't have a directly parallel case. Meaning that I've been set up and now you're moving in on me. So another attempt. Meisvei. Ose adam chanus b'tzad chanus shel chaveiro, merchetz b'tzad merchetzo shel chaveiro, ve'enu yachol limchaz b'yadam ish yachol, ma'ata ose b'tol shelcha, but he ose b'tol sheli. Now we have another source which says a person has a right to set up a store next to his friend's store. I can set up a bathhouse next to my friend's bathhouse, because I can say, You have your clients, I have my clients. This seems to indicate what? Is there a problem with competition?
If there
are enough people. Not good. So Tanoihi, it's a machokas Tanoim. The Tanya, Kofim b'neim uval zeh zesh lo lahoshe b'neim lo chayet lo borsiki lo b'lame tinokos lo echabi b'nei b'alei umnis lo shcheno eino kofeyu. So the first opinion is that the people have a right to make rules in the community. There will only be one tailor. There will only be one tanner. There will only, and you can go, etc. There will only be one school in this area. Right? You have a right to make rules like that. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, I can even force my neighbor. Meaning, it doesn't have to be a general law. I, as an individual. So, Amar Rav Huna Berei de Rabbi Yoshua. Now, this is a second opinion. We discussed Rav Huna. Now, this is Rav Huna Berei de Rabbi Yoshua. Shitri bar masa chrita ro matimake. So it seems to me, obviously, that one member of the neighborhood can't stop another member of the neighborhood. We both live here. You open a dry cleaner, I can open a dry cleaner. You open a pizza store, I can open a pizza store. Everyone agrees on that. The only time I could stop someone from competing, he says, is in the event that the person is coming to be shayach bekarga the hachal ro matimake. So he says as follows. He says, as long as everything is equal, meaning that in the event that I live in this neighborhood and I have to pay local taxes, and you come from outside and you don't pay local taxes, then I can say that's not fair. That's not fair competition. However, as long as we're on even footing, that whatever taxes I pay, you have to pay, that everything is done is fair competition, one person cannot stop another person. He said, everybody agrees, the Gemara says, when it comes to schools, you can't stop someone else because competition is very good, right? The more schools, the better. However, when it comes to anything else, if you don't have fair competition, then you can stop, but not if there is fair competition. So what do we have? We have here a disagreement between Rav Huna on the one hand, who says that even in the case of fair competition, A can stop B. In case, according to the opinion of Rav Huna, Berei de Rabbi Yoshua, no, if it's fair competition, all's fair, unless there's something that makes it unfair. So let's go back to the what was that case we're talking about? That community where they had one restaurant. One kosher was, I think that's what, we, what? I don't know, what? What? Santa Fe, maybe Anchorage, how many kosher restaurants were there? I have to check, right? So in those, so do you have a right to open a second one if the first guy puts his foot down and says, I don't want it? Now, of course, the first guy's always going to put his foot down because competition is not good for the other person. So this is a matter of machlokas. Rav Huna says you have a right to stop. Rav Huna Berei de Yoshua says that you can't stop it. Who do we follow? The bottom. What? Assuming as long as that everything's equal, meaning that even if the person from the other city, if they're paying the same taxes, you're good.
What happens? Well,
again, Chachamim were rejected at one point because we said
that is always equal when you get into business. Not everything is equal.
Well, rules are equal. Let's take a case of, real estate brokers. Give me an example, if you know anything about it. Where would it be where one broker has an unfair advantage over the other one?
If someone has more... is more able to, in other words, to cut the other guy out at a lower price because he's able to, he has more capital, he's able to.
Why is that not fair?
I'm just saying, you think what?
I'm talking about not fair. I'm talking, again, if one guy is doing more volume and because of that.
No, not because of that. So someone again, has more capital. So he could undercut the other guy.
So you're saying that this is predatory pricing?
Right.
So you're saying in a case, so let me understand you. So In the case where a guy is selling,
one guy's a multimillionaire.
So one guy's going to sell
below cost
until he runs everybody else out of business. And then when everyone else out of business, he's going to jack the prices off because he's got the monopoly, right? Okay, so that would be a case of unfair, right? Because ultimately, that is what makes it unfair. What makes it unfair is ultimately it's bad for the consumer, right? In the short term, the consumer is going to gain, right? Now, again, this is what we call the Walmart effect here in America.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's like a pizza shop. Somebody owns the building, so he could sell a slice of pizza for $2. The other guy rents, so he has to charge $4.
But again, if the guy owns the building and he could charge you, and he tends on charging less going across the board, like that's the same as if one guy's name is Brooklyn Pizza and the other guy's name is Pizza Hut.
Right.
And Brooklyn Pizza is paying more because they're not buying the same bulk as Pizza Hut. Pizza Hut gets cheaper cheese. Pizza Hut gets cheaper dough. Pizza Hut gets cheaper marinara sauce.
They're
gets cheaper boxes, etc. That's not unfair. That's economies of scale, right? In the event that the prices are the same, but Pizza Hut, you know, is willing to take a loss until he runs everybody else out of business,
and
that's already not right. Right, that's already not fair. What's the difference? Because in the first case, the consumer is going to end up, let's say, with the same quality pizza at a cheaper price. Right? In the second case, they're not going to get a cheaper price there. So again, competition is good unless it's, you're saying, perhaps it's artificial short-term and eventually it will hurt the consumer. Right? So we have here a question. According to the first opinion, according to Rav Huna, competition in general, if I came first, I have rights. And you might be better at it, right? You might be able to produce a better product, a cheaper product, etc. But still, you don't have a right to, I was here first, I opened up the store, right? And therefore, you can't run me out.
It's limited to an area, or maybe a parcel.
Well, again, obviously, you know, if I have a pizza store here and you want to open up one in Boulder, right, I didn't, because I was the first person to stake a pizza in the United States of America.
But you're saying in the mills, you could have one, you could have two.
Well, no, again, according to the first opinion, no. According to the first opinion, says that I have a mill here, you can't open a second mill, because I could say you're hurting my parnassa, you're hurting my livelihood. According to the second opinion, assuming that the second mill is playing by the same rules as the first mill, and it's all fair, may the best man or woman or person or otherwise win, and that will be fine. Yeah.
Sorry, got a more basic question.
No reason to be sorry, that's fine.
This rule that we're learning here, is this a rabbinic extension of the Torah rule, or is this just a better or more deep interpretation of the Torah rule?
So are you asking what's the source?
I'm asking whether this kind of
not at all. This Hasagas Gvul is what I would almost call a Yiddishism.
Okay.
It's like the Erev.
So this is like
right. So again, right. This is now again clearly they have a right to do that. But there's
so
nothing in the
that
Torah.
Case, you don't always. It might follow the more faithful opinions rather than following the Chachamim, because there's more of them.
Well, the Chachamim are the more makel in this case.
But
again, but
Sakla.
Again, this isn't a matter of suffix. It's a question of how we pass it. Yes.
So the point of the situation is like where we've got car dealerships, there's 20 of them, but in the same street, like in Florida, restaurants, you've got 5 within the same complex.
So this is kind of standard. If you want to buy a diamond or jewelry in New York, you go to
Diamond Center.
Because how many places sell there?
Hundreds.
Hundreds. Hundreds on one block.
Upstairs.
Not only would it be cool, it is actually cool, because that's exactly what's going on. So again, one has to wonder from a business point of view, right? Obviously, competition isn't killing everybody there. Quite the opposite. It, in fact, is the
people
correct. people who want to buy are all coming to the block now. So we first have to deal with this question of whether it exists or not. According to the first opinion of Rav Huna, there is such a rule. According to Rav Huna, Rabbi Yehoshua, there's no such rule. Anybody who, as long as we're fair competitors, go for it, right? And whatever it might be. If I own a jewelry store and you want to open a jewelry store in the same building, let's say hypothetically, right? According to this, according to the first opinion, the person who's there first says, get out of my building and stay out. According to the second opinion, no. Assuming that everybody's playing by the same rules and nobody's stealing, I don't know, customers or anything like that, then it would all be okay. So let's see how we paskin.
If I cut my own diamonds, I can sell them for cheaper. Less money.
Correct.
So we're not considering that an unfair game.
Not at all. Okay. We think vertical integration is great. If I own the mines and then I also cut them and I also design it, etc., and therefore I cut out middlemen and therefore I'm producing the same or better product at all, right? Right. That's the idea being is that what we have to keep in mind, according to the second opinion, it's not just a matter of the sellers, but we also have to care for the buyers. Right? The consumer is a third party beneficiary that, of course, we have to take care of as well, it would seem. So let's take a look. Tosfos discusses this. Tosfos right there on the Gemara. He said, Rav Huna debrei Rabbi Yehoshua karabanan sfirulei. He said, the last opinion, the more lenient opinion, the opinion that says that allows more competition, that follows the majority opinion. The marmuvua abar muvua da alma imatzi ma'akev ihave b'chal shcheino ilav k'deparash akunches kavasei kaimelon. And because the second opinion is following the majority opinion, that's how we follow. There is no such thing as hasagas gavul in the Torah, according to Tosfos. You could have been in business for 50 years. If I want to open up next door, there's nothing stopping me. The Rush deals with the same question, quotes the both opinions, and then says on the second line, V'lesel de Rav Huna chadid de kamet k'yechida. We don't follow the opinion, the first opinion. One is it's a minority opinion. V'loyed machal kosom de yisla kelsa of Shimon Gamliel. V'lod Rav Huna b'rei de Rav Shua hu basra. Not only that, but historically, the second opinion came later in history, and our general rule is we always follow the later opinion. Because the later opinion had the advantage of seeing the earlier opinion, while the early opinion never really got the opportunity to consider the later opinion. So therefore, the Rosh says clearly that we don't have such a thing as Hasagas Gvul. The Rambam, again, all the major opinions reject that there is such a thing as Hasagas Gvul. Haisa Shamerchas, Ochanos, Orechayim. If there was a bathhouse or a store or a mill, and someone opens a second bathhouse, or a second mill, I can't say you're hurting my livelihood. That's not a good argument. And even if the guy's from outside of town, you still can't stop him. If he comes from a different city, right, totally, right, and then you could stop him. But that's only if he doesn't have to pay the taxes. If he has to pay the taxes, no matter where he comes from, you can't stop him. So the Rambam, the Rush, Tosfos, all have been clear that there is no such rule of what we call Hasagas Gavul. The Shulchan Aruch follows the same thing. Quotes the Rambam. So it seems across the board here that nobody thinks that this is a problem. And in fact, if anybody wants to come in and open up another restaurant, another jewelry store, another, you name the business, even if it's right next door, there's no problem. As long as there's fair competition, as long as they're both paying the same taxes, let the best... No, the idea being, this is in fact... as crazy as it sounds, this up until recently, this was an issue. Amazon had an unfair advantage over the local stores because Amazon was shipping from Kentucky. And therefore, when you ship to Colorado, everybody, all the local businesses are paying 8-9% of taxes, and they weren't. Right? So I said that was an unfair competition point. Right? That wasn't right. That they were getting away without having to pay taxes while the local guy did. That was something that's not fair. Why shouldn't they have to pay taxes? Right? So that was they're talking about. If there's some sort of unfair advantage, and again, we can really point to a case like that, then that is something that in fact you have a right to stop. But assuming that we're all paying the same taxes and we're all playing by the same rules, then there's no problem with competition. Yes. Who are the they? Huh? Who are these?
I don't know. That's just so they went out to Aurora and opened up out there, which didn't last any. So that wasn't true.
So again, for what we've seen up until now, we have not yet seen a source which would say that the type of competition that was fair can be stopped. Doesn't seem that at all. Again, we've seen the overwhelming majority of the standard opinions, the Rambam, the Rush, the Shulchan Aruch, all of them make it clear that we don't follow that opinion in the Gemara. The first chink in the armor, though, comes in the Mordechai. The Mordechai has a very strange statement. The Mordechai is discussing a very specific case. It talks about a dead end. So you have a dead end. So you think about it, it's an alley, it's number 7, right? Surrounded by 3 sides. And somebody owns a store in this alley. It says, Mavui asasim gimel tzadim, an alleyway that's closed on 3 sides. Rak b'tzad echi yitzlubo v'dar uvein etzol sofa asasim. Right? So again, there's only one way to enter and one way to exit. And I own, let's say, a bookstore at the end of the alley. Right? Or a dry cleaner, end of the alley. Whatever it is. Okay? Now Shimon goes and he opens up a store by the entrance. There's no way to get to my business without walking past his business. So again, he owns the dry cleaner there. You're never going to get to my dry cleaner without walking past his. I can shut him down. I could say that's not fair. Now the question is why? Didn't we just say all's fair? Why in the world every single opinion we've seen says we reject the opinion of Rav Huna, who says that fair competition, I have a right to stop.
So we said all things equal, taxes are equal, everything.
Right.
So entrance is another.
So again, why is that different? So let's say we would have a situation where somebody opens up a motel.
Okay.
Let's say right now the one quality hotel in the area that's in the Arab is the Staybridge, right? But the Staybridge is 1.3 miles from here, right? So therefore, I open a quality within the Erev, closer to Shul, right, establishment, only a half a mile away. Staybridge says, you're going to kill us. We want to stop you. What would you say?
Well, I would say that you can open up.
Why is that different?
Because it's not a closed, you know, it gives people a second place to cut.
Again, there's a second place also there.
Yeah, but
right, people could walk past it, and I don't know why anybody would. So
exactly.
To here.
Why would anyone go down the alley?
So why would anyone go to Staybridge if I just open up a place here next to High Point?
That's right. It's better. I would say the new place.
Correct. So why is it different? Why are you against the guy in the alleyway, but you're okay with me opening up here?
Because no one's going to go. There are a lot of other people that can go to the State Bridge.
You're saying they'll lose the Shabbos business, but they can still get by on the Tuesday business.
Exactly.
So the Ramah, this is, we've discussed this Ramah before. This is the case you might remember of the Rambams. Remember the Ramah Mipanu went and he published a new Rambam, and then he got undercut
by
gold coin. Correct. So the Ramah said that that's unfair competition. Because no one's going to buy the more expensive one. They're just going to buy the cheaper one. Wait a second. So why is that a problem? So Ramah points to this opinion and says, it's one thing if I'm going to hurt the other guy. But if I am going to destroy the person's business, right, the bottom line is if I have a restaurant and you open another restaurant, my business will go down. But I'm not going to necessarily go out of business. Right? My profits will probably go down. I'm going to have to become more original. Right? I might have to produce better product. I might have to have open more hours. Right? I'm going to have to compete harder. Right? I might have to give better quality meat or something like that. But ultimately, you know, I can stay in business. Obviously, I was making more money when I had a monopoly, but it's not necessarily going to put me out of business. He said, the point of the Mordechai was that if you're 100%, in the case of the alleyway, that guy is dead. No one's going to walk past the first one to go to the second one. Right? Therefore, the person will inevitably be put out of business. He said, so that is already a problem. So again, competition where the market is big enough for the both of us, obviously I'm going to not do as well. Then forget it. Then I have a right to compete. However, if there's only room for one of us here, right? This town ain't big enough for the both of us, and you're going to put me out of business, then I have a right to stop you. That's the Ramah says what the Mordechai is saying. I remember I once had a case in the Beis Din, actual case, where it was as follows. It was a community that had, again, one restaurant. It was a fascinating restaurant. It was a restaurant that was one of these kolbo restaurants. It served solid deli food and Chinese and Mexican, right? Italian, right? You walked in, if you offered a taco, the guy put on a sombrero. You ordered a sushi, put on one of them. Start talking with an accent. You want fly lice, you know, right? You want a cowboy burger, you put on a tongue, right? And all of a sudden, another guy came in, and this guy just did Chinese. And obviously, the food, the experience was much better because it wasn't the guy who was Mexican a minute ago. All of a sudden, it's Sun Yat-sen, you know. But rather, you know, this was a case of a guy. This is what they did one thing, and they did it right. And beforehand. Right before this new restaurant moved in, the Kolbo restaurant was clearing, I think, $18,000 a week, grossing, not name, grossing. Right now that this other guy's open, he went from $18,000 down to $12,000. Took a nice hit there, while the Chinese is making $24,000 a week. Right? What does that prove? There you go. Nailed it.
Very good.
Right? What it proved was the market was big enough for the both of them. Because what is the gross now? 36, which is double 18. The fact that one guy is both literally and figuratively eating the other guy's lunch because he's just doing a better job, right? Because he has better hours, better product, you know, more.
One thing.
He's doing one thing and he's doing it well. There's no way you're going to let that guy. Because, again, the only time, according to this, that you're going to stop somebody is in the event that the market is not big enough. Yes.
Well, the fact is that
and maybe enhances his business a little bit. He can be in competition.
What if it's a newsstand? They both sell the paper for a dollar.
Why would I go down the alley to get my paper when you get it up here?
I'm sure there will be a handful of people who, you know, I've been getting it from him for the last 45 years. Right, yeah. Right, you know.
Right.
That's right. They work back and forth. Correct. So according to, unlike what we originally thought, that there is no room whatsoever for unfair, assuming it's fair competition, right? We are, just like America is a capitalist society. Don't forget it, Bernie. But, right? So too, halacha is capitalistic also, right? Right? We support the invisible hand that, you know, makes everything as good as it can be. So therefore, the idea being that no, not always. If there's only room for the one of us and I was here first, I have a right to stay here. Right? And this is the idea.
It's all subjective.
No, it's not subjective. Meaning that, again, as I gave an example here.
I know, but it's still subjective. I mean, maybe the guy can't make it off of the 12,000 before he was making 8,000.
But so what? If the market is 36,000, right? There's no rule that he has a right to be in business, right? If the market is big enough for two places and he's losing because he has bad hours, he has bad customer service, he has bad product, right? Right? His butcher keeps on yelling at people when they walk in the door, right? Or anything like that, right? In such a case, so he has a right, he should lose and someone else should go in. Right. Once it's a big enough market, there's no rule that the first guy has a right to make a living off of it.
I think it's going to be the size of the market, because I should have to affect the knowledge
of the... So that is a good question. And it's a very, nowadays, it's a very tricky market, right? Because depending on the product, markets nowadays might very well be global. Right? Right now, whatever I'm selling, wherever I'm selling, I'm undoubtedly competing with Amazon. Right? Amazon sells everywhere. Everywhere, right? So nowadays, the idea of what is the market, it used to be easy. You had one shtetl, that was the market, right? That was the long and the short of it. Now they've had these crazy inventions like cars, right? The mail, right? The definition of the market has gotten much broader than it was. Also nowadays, I should point out that the definition of the product has gotten much thinner. So for example, someone who sells a product wholesale and someone who sells the same product retail, even though it's the same product, that's not considered competition. Meaning that, you know, to say that 7-Eleven and Costco are competitors, it isn't, right? You buy a can of Coke in 7-Eleven, you buy a lifetime supply, right? You need 40,000 rolls of toilet paper, you go to Costco, right? Right? So even though it's the same product which accomplishes the same thing at the end of the day, right? So the idea of the product has changed greatly. I've had cases of a bagel store that, in fact, is trying to stop a bakery from moving in. Is that the same product?
No.
Are bagels and rolls the same? And a sock store, you come in and buy a few pairs of socks. But let me ask you this question. Right? I don't want to speak blasphemy, but this might be a little crazy. Can you imagine if we served rolls at the semi-annual meeting? Would people say that's the same product?
No.
No. There'd be blood in the streets.
What?
No, we wouldn't sell them. We'd give them out.
Come to an annual meeting.
I have Tuna Man here. The world's expert in these areas. Right.
Oh, yes.
Schools are closed.
They're usually bagels, not
right.
Okay.
Right. The argument is that, yeah, you make the same brach on it, but people do not consider it the same. If I'm the mooted for a bagel, I'm not going to go buy a roll. And you know what? Instead of buying lechem mishnah, I'm not going to buy two bagels.
I mean, the shul was closed down this weekend because there was no kiddush.
Yeah, that was these are trying times.
Okay.
So in fact, the idea nowadays of hasagas gvul becomes very rare. You have nowadays markets that are much larger. To say that there is a market that's not big enough to support two of anything is very, very rare. And the definition of the product is much narrower, meaning that, you know, it's not baked goods anymore, but it's bagels, it's rolls, it's croissants, right? It's macarons, right? Yeah, now that you know, you have stores that just sell cupcakes, right? That's all they sell, right? Just cupcakes. That's all they sell. It used to be in the olden days, you know, the same store that sold the bagels, sold the rolls, sold the cupcakes. No. Right, you know, can you believe it? I hear that there's places out there, you know what they sell? Coffee. That's it. That's it. They walk in. You think they're ever going to make a parnassa like that? Crazy people. Who's going to make a living just selling coffee?
Exactly.
What type of fool would pay that? Right? There, the world has changed to the point where because of the definition of market. So again, it's a few things. One is we support competition. Fair competition is great, right? That's on the one hand, right? On the other hand, right, when it comes to the when it talks to what would be considered, the only time we won't support it is in the event where inevitably the new person will be putting the old person out of business. Right? And that case just doesn't come up nowadays, right? Because we're dealing with markets that are global markets. We're doing products which are such thinly defined products, right? Right? The difference between wholesale, the difference in retail, the product differentiation, right? If I was explaining to someone a few years ago, not all phones are the same, right? Not even all wireless, but there was one thing called an Android and another thing called an Apple. And yes, they all do the same things, but they could not be more different, right? Shlomo would never stand outside the store all night waiting for an Android, right? Right? Even though everything does the same thing at the end of the day, right? Right? But they're radically different products in the mind of the consumer. So that, of course, has changed everything. There are cases where it gets a little tricky, right? Let's go back to discuss the Walmart effect. What was the Walmart effect? The Walmart effect is Walmart comes into town, and because of the sheer size of Walmart and the fact that it's a really, really well-run business, right? They have the ability to charge less for their products.
But they also get their goods from overseas. They get a cheaper product for a cheaper price.
Well, if that's the case, then they're not competing. Right? Again, if Walmart would open up next to Tiffany's, I don't think that would be considered kind of competition. Right? I think
products are good enough.
Right, they're selling the same dreck as the other guy is, but they're just selling it for cheaper, and it's more convenient. They buy more massive amounts, right? They negotiate harder to get the lower prices. They truck it in themselves rather than having to pay a middleman to truck it.
To bring people in. They'll sacrifice that to bring people to the store.
Right. Not as much as other stores, I don't think. Right? Max Stern. People ever hear of Max Stern? Never heard of Max Stern? Stern College for Women,
yeah,
maybe?
That Max Stern?
Yeah, right. Max Stern Athletic Center, NYU. Right? Stern College of Business at NYU. Right. Right, Max Stern.
What was his business?
He made a lot of money. Yes. He printed money. No, what he did was as follows. He was an immigrant, and he came with this great idea. He gave away free parakeets to people.
Really?
Just kept on giving away free birds.
Where did he get the birds?
He made it. Well, he bought them. He made it up in volume, though, even though he gave him for free. That's how he made his money. No, I'm kidding. The way he made his money is he sold bird food. Mm-hmm. And when everybody had birds, right? So he took a loss on every bird. Every time a guy took a bird and just ate it for dinner, it's too bad on him. But
he wasn't giving away chickens. He was giving away parakeets.
Listen, it wasn't as filling. What can I tell you?
He really gave away birds.
Right, that's a classic.
They needed food, so
he sold
himself?
Yeah, in his backyard.
Really?
He could pick out worms. I don't know. He could produce birds.
Granule.
Seeds.
Seeds. Yeah. Right.
Is that Jerry Kaufman part of that thing?
I don't know. You know. most relevant. So the reason is as follows. So let's give an example. On my block, where I live, on the rare occasion when I'm not in Denver, there are two kosher pizza stores, two kosher fleishik stores, and there also used to be two kosher grocery stores. That's all on the block. I don't have to cross the street to get to that. If I cross the street, then there's a kosher Chinese also. And there's other options as well, but just on the block, right? Why are they all in business?
Because you have enough people there that are buying
from
all of them.
What?
Right,
because Avi and Shlomo supported Golan. Right? Yeah, right? So again, that is a large enough market that there's no problem. If that's the what? So where isn't? So I have told people, as recently as this Shabbos, when they came to kvetch me, that anybody who wants to open up a kosher restaurant in Denver, I'm saying it on the record now, right, I will go to the VAD, and I will plead their case and get them a hashgacha.
There was a time, a while back then, you probably know better than I did, that the VAD mixed with another kosher restaurant.
So again, the VAD denies it. They deny that, which is why I've said it. That again, I don't believe it ever happened. I don't know. I wasn't here again. And anyone who's approached me, right? People have approached me about opening a kosher coffee bean here, right? What have you not? I have made
Chinese.
What?
Chinese.
Yes, about they'll deny it. In any case, they'll deny it.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. Is that I am willing to go to bat.
No,
on the record, online here, I'm saying it. I will go to back. I believe that we have a large enough market here that it can support more than one kosher restaurant. I just have not seen anyone who coming forward in my tenure here who has wanted to invest in it. If someone does, I will 100% back them and make sure they get a hashgacha.
I know. I have sat next to the current CEO of the VAD, Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting next to him at a dinner. He has made it clear that he has talked to different community members and said he'll make it as easy as possible to give hashgacha.
Correct. And again, I believe that 100%. I've spoken to the prior CEOs, and I've sat down with those people and said, listen, you know, and they said, come on, come forward. Absolutely. So that's the story. It is a very, very rare case. Now, the only cases where you'll see this sometimes is if someone, I don't think we could support two Sfarim stores here, right? I don't know if we could support one here.
Well,
but if
we don't even have one anymore.
We don't currently have one.
So
if
we
did,
have one.
What? Right? What? So again, in the event that somebody, but that, the truth of the matter is, there is value to having something. Again, if I wanted to buy a Likutei Maharich, I don't think I could get it on Amazon. I might be able to get it at Eichler's. What? Right. Right. Or I might need something now. Right. So there is a, in the event that someone opened a kosher Jewish bookstore here, I would say no, you would not be able to open a competing one. I would think that would be the type of thing that the market is not big enough for the two of them. Multiple at one time? No. What?
Why is it?
Again, how often is that open?
And based on our old members.
What?
Again.
Yeah.
He sold multiple. Why didn't he have your Likutei Ma'arechim?
Right.
Saying, you know, can you tell you, I'll get to you online.
Yeah.
In other words, he'll go online, he'll buy
it. The same way you would. Yeah, they'll charge you
extra
$5 for going online.
Smart. I mean, the purchase of Sfarim has changed in the last 20 years.
I don't buy my Sfarim online. I buy them in bookstores.
Okay.
You know, that's like a bookstore. It's like a moving bookstore.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but what I'm saying is that a lot of times you won't know if you can support it until after the fact.
So again, so the bottom line, so that's the Beis Din's problem. And in the event, so the Beis Din at that point has to make a best guess, and they might make a mistake, and they might be proven wrong, and then they'll have to say, okay, we back out, we go the other way, right? We don't have prophecy here. Right. The cases where it gets tricky is like the Chicago case, right? Meaning, let's say you have a Jewel Osco or something, okay. Hypothetically.
Okay.
Which is not as good. Okay. Nothing's good as King Soopers. Right? And you have the local kosher store, Rosenberg's. What? Not Rosenberg's, is the store. Right, folks are good. Right. Right. So in the event this, let's say so, the big King Super is going to open up a large Tame Lee Chow, let's say hypothetically or something like that.
Kosher takeout, kosher fresh food.
Right. So in the event if they're on Howard King David. So in the event, so sometimes what the basin will do. Again, the concern is what we said earlier. The Walmart effect of putting prices artificially low to force out the little guy. So now the big guy will have monopoly and will be able to raise the prices. It's incumbent on the basin to stop that as well. Because again, we're in the business of helping the consumer. Right? Right. So again, a short term ability for money savings, long term is not going to be helpful. What the Basin can do in that case, and what is suggested in this case, is allowing the competition, but putting in price floors. Meaning that they're not allowed to charge less than the certain amount for the following things, which will stop an artificial.
Basin will do that.
They will put in price floors and will tell them that they have to maintain. None of this, you know.
Do they do that in New York?
In New York, they
said. But do they do that in...
Again, the cases never come up in New York. There's no way anyone could come in. There's no way that anyone could come in and stamp out everybody in New York. It's just way too big of a market.
In Chicago, I remember when they were opening Joel.
Right.
There was a big push for
the... If I remember correctly, the CRC would not give them a hashgacha, and then somebody else did. Some other well-known organization did.
So they sold kosher meat, is what you're saying.
There was a lot more.
Takeout, bakery,
wow.
Chinese,
sushi.
They're still in business?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Right. Now, what the Basin will do in that case, they will maintain the price floors until it becomes clear that people are traveling elsewhere. Right? If they are maintaining price floors and then people are just going to the next community over and they're not buying for either of these twos, then they'll remove the price floors and allow the big guy to wipe out the little guy. Because two things. One is the little guy's dead one way or the other. There's nothing we can do to save him. He's not making it one way or the other. And two is we see it that the big guy's not going to be able to do that because if people are willing to travel to the next town, you know, if they try to jack up the price, they're never going to have their monopoly. As long as people can get in a car and go to the next town, so that's it. You don't have your monopoly anyhow. Right, so in fact, so going back to our original question, how does this all work out with the Sherman Antitrust Act? Not a problem whatsoever. The Beis Din, in fact, is doing things to encourage competition. They're not trying to stamp out competition. Right? The only time that a Beis Din will stop it is to stop one monopoly from replacing another monopoly. But in the event that there's a possibility of competition, even if it means that one of the that the current guy is going to lose some profits, so be it.
So the Beit Din would stand up for the guy at the end of the alley?
So the Beit Din would stand up for the end of the alley. Okay. In that case, the idea being. But in other cases, it just if a person opens up a restaurant next to another restaurant, right, or a jewelry store next to another jewelry store or the like, you know, assuming that is big enough, this town's big enough for two jewelry stores, you know, or for 10 jewelry stores, or maybe this whole building is full of jewelers for that bit, that could possibly be. In a case like that, the Beit Din, I think, would not have an issue with it, just assuming that all competition is fair. What? Again, so again, in that, the only time that opinion is there is in the event that I have invested, right? Meaning that I went and I laid out. So again, this could be a case, right? In the event that I have a car showroom, right? And you can come down and you can try out the cars, etc., right? And you're standing in front of my business saying, buy online $100 less. And I'm paying for the showroom, and I'm helping you choose which one.
You can keep the car overnight, you can drive it.
Right, yeah, so again, I'm helping you, I'm providing a service. And now you're going piggybacking on me, right? So that's the same as the, no you've got to get out of my. I don't know, next door. Again, there has to be a certain amount of distance that has to be put there. But, you know, what they call, showrooming, is that what it is? That, you know, where you know, I go to Best Buy and I try out everything, and then I buy it online from somebody else, right? Which is what was killing Best Buy until they figured out how to beat it, right? Right? That, in fact, is not right. I can't take advantage of you walk in with no intention of buying, just, you know, try out everything and see, you know, try on the clothing, see what fits me best. You know, okay, this is the size I need. This is the color. I like this. Now go online and buy it cheaper. Right? That's the case of the fish. You put the money into baiting the area. That's not right. But if in other cases where all else is equal. All right. So we are going to leave it at that. We will continue next week.
So I don't know.